This is State of the Union, the District Council 37 radio show on 91.5 WNYE FM. I'm Chris Policano. DC 37 is New York City's largest public employee union with 125,000 members and nearly 50,000 retirees. We're part of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, also known as AFSCME. We're on the air Sundays at 8 p.m. We rebroadcast on Wednesdays at 1:30 p.m. We're also available as a podcast. Simply go to the podcast app on your smartphone or tablet and search for DC 37 State of the Union. And there are other ways to stay in touch with the union. Check out the website, www.dc37.net. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. If you have any comments about this show or would like to promote a community event, please drop us a line at stateoftheunion@dc37.net. We have in the studio today, we've got Barbara Edmonds, who is the Director of Field Operations, and Stacy Patton. Payton. Well, that didn't take long to screw up a little bit. Who is a graduate of the first DC 37 Women's Leadership Academy. Joining us by phone is Associate Public Health Sanitarian and a local 768 member. Her name is Daisha Padia. And let me ask you, this was a big event that took place recently, the graduation of the first class of the Women's Leadership Academy. Let's take a step back. You were on this show before talking about the Women's Leadership Academy. Let's refresh listeners' minds about what the Women's Leadership Academy is all about.
Sure. Well, the Leadership Academy is an outgrowth of our international union, AFSCME, better known as the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, efforts to uplift and create more opportunities for women leaders, not only in DC 37, but throughout the nation. So back in 2012, at their 40th AFSCME convention, a resolution was passed by the delegates to start the process of launching a Women's Leadership Academy across all of the international union convention constituents.
So other AFSCME unions are also forming, as a result of the resolution, Women's Leadership Academies within their locals?
Correct, but okay. We are the first of the affiliates. We are the first cohort. We have 17 graduates on Saturday, February 23rd, that were joined by our Secretary Treasurer, Elisa McBride, along with our former and wonderful executive director, the first female and African-American executive director, Lillian Roberts. And that was a wonderful graduation. We, as I said, had 17 graduates.
I saw that event all over social media.
Folks were very
happy. They were posting their pictures and they were taking quotes down. And it was quite the event. It looked from afar like quite the event.
It really was. And I'm sure the folks that are joining us that are graduates on the radio show will share a little bit more. And we also had our 13 mentors, which were some of our senior leadership and management positions that served as the mentees, and our wonderful women in their own right who helped lead in our union. And of course, our executive director, Henry Garrido. And finally, we were joined by many of the 11 locals leadership that nominated these women to participate in this 6-month program.
Let me go take it back, and then we'll talk to the graduates. The role of the mentors is that's a crucial part of this, is to have folks are learning and folks are teaching, and that's what the exchange is all about, and that's what the program is all about over a period of so many weeks. Is that correct?
Correct, and even going further, the mentors are really there to provide the support, the coaching. Not to do the work for them, but to provide the important role models and really be there to make sure that they can get through the program in a way that will help build their leadership journey going forward. And that's one of the things that is critical and exciting about the program. And we really drill down, as I said, when we had our last call, on making sure that not only do they develop their gifts and talents, but we support them in ways in providing the kind of skills training on communication skills and many other things that you'll hear about.
Daisha, joining us by phone, what was the experience like for you to be part of the Women's Leadership Academy?
The experience, it was a wonderful experience. It allowed me to grow as a person, and it helped me embrace my role as a leader to other members as I gained skills with, as Barbara said, with communication, what a leader is about, what to expect. And also in one of the classes we had to look what we're doing now and what we have to do forward in regards to becoming a better leader. And it so happened that the Monday after that class, I was up for an interview. And based on that class, I was able to reflect on how I'm going to approach the interview for a supervisor. And when I went to the...
And you got it.
Yes, I went to the...
Congratulations.
Interview. I took the skills and I got the promotion. So that's why I'm now an associate public health sanitarian.
Congratulations. Congratulations. Stacy, you are active. You have been active in your local. And so this was an opportunity, as Daisha said, to continue to build on that which you have already been interested in, which is the life and breath of the union.
As Barbara explained, the AFSCME's Women's Leadership Academy had been in place since 2013, and I always wanted to participate. But the fact that it was so far away made it hard. So when they brought it to DC 37, that was a wonderful opportunity to be involved right here in our backyard. We participated one Saturday a month, and the mentors, like Barbara explained, helped us to build our own character, but they also provided us with different classes of skill sets, strategic planning. We did, I'm forgetting, I'm sorry, but we did strategic planning. We also did, like, public speaking.
Did you connect with the other folks in the program?
Oh, absolutely.
So now you have each other as
yes,
you go
forward. It's a sisterhood. We've built a sisterhood. As a matter of fact, one of the other women was applying for a master's program, and she reached out to me, and I was able to help her assist with her, you know, writing her personal statement. So now we've had this camaraderie ship, and that we'll take it and move forward.
Do you think that women find it a challenge to take these roles on within the union, that it's important to focus on women as future leaders of the union?
Well, one of the things is women represent 60% of union membership. And as women, we are natural nurturers, right? Mm-hmm. So we automatically worry about our families, we worry about our jobs, we worry about finances. This class and this program enables us to take all of that natural nurturing and embody it in empowerment. So it makes us stronger as individuals. That makes our families stronger as they see their mothers in positions of power. Not power, but in positions of empowerment and leadership. And enables us to stand taller, protect ourselves, speak up for others. So it just builds on that relationship of embettering ourselves.
Daisha, what did you get out of this?
What I got out of it is
yes.
Being part of a sisterhood. Just haven't been from the Caribbean and migrated to here. I've never left my family there. And with these women, we did form a strong bond, and it was a great sense of sisterhood, a great sense of achievement to learn the skill set, because haven't fully embraced that I am a leader, and this has allowed me to go forward and just learn more and be the best that I can be as a leader.
Stacey, when people tell, I always get frustrated when members say, talk about the union. What is the union doing about blah, blah, blah? And the frustrating challenge is to say, excuse me, but you are the union. Mm-hmm. How much of a problem is that as you try to motivate folks or you try to talk to folks about what the union is?
Well, one of the skill sets we picked up in the program when we were working on our personal projects was better communications within our union. And a lot of times when members say the union and they don't understand that they themselves are the unions, there's a disconnect.
Right.
So our job as leaders is to reconnect our members, right, and to make them understand that we're not here to do the job for you, but to help you facilitate how to better do the job for yourself.
And do you find that people are feeling more empowered by that? I mean, is that a real challenge to get people to understand that? And what does it feel like when they do understand it for you?
Well, when the Janus case decision was decided in June of 2018, you know, people were worried that, oh my God, people are going to leave the union. But in fact, it was a way for the union to hit a reset button and reorganize and rethink how to utilize something like Janus to empower us more. So now members, I think we haven't even lost a lot of members, right, Barbara? More members have joined the union because of that than have left. But this program gives women a voice and a voice to be heard clearly and practically.
And for the future.
And for the future.
Barbara, what... How does this grow now? What is the future like for the Leadership Academy? And again, as I say, the vibe on this has been so positive, and the people, everybody involved seems to have really experienced something that they want to continue to be part of. So how does this work moving forward?
On two levels, I'd like to mention. The first level is that we have the opportunity to use the 17 graduates for our Leading the Way program that our executive director has been promoting, and that is to use them as volunteer member organizers, whether it's organizing new members within the council in different sectors or to help our sisters and brothers and other affiliates across the country where we're doing organizing around healthcare, EMS workers, and others. We'll also be asking them to take more of a lead role in helping to mentor for the next class that we'll be proceeding with fairly soon to get applicants and to really be the ambassadors of letting other women and men as well and families and communities that being a leader, everyone can do that if we're open to it. And when we are leaders in our workplaces, we're also leaders in the community. And I always like to promote the fact that we work and we live in the community. And the importance of building public sector unions really is one and the same. So we're really excited about that. The second part is that we will be pursuing the next class, and you should stay tuned for any of our listeners that are on the phone if they're interested. And they are DC 37 members. They should look out on the website for the application process, which we probably will be launching within the next month. They can go on www.dc37.net, and they could look for the Women's Leadership Academy icon and find information on the next class.
Let me interrupt you for 1 second just to what is the commitment in terms of time that one makes to being part of the academy?
The commitment is one both personally and as someone who wants to become more active and a leader to understand collectively that we are stronger together. The class the class structure is that once a month, they would be required to attend a class for over 6 months. They would also have a field project that could involve either being involved in a political campaign or just simply going out and do that organizing in a work site that they work in, or doing external organizing, meaning for new members and getting involved as a volunteer member. So there's that field component, and there's also a project. So they would want to be reaching out to their local union leader, meaning the president, and getting their support to nominate them and aligning whatever project they pursue, which we would facilitate with our mentors, a way in which they can help build the union.
Daisha, I'm going to give you the last word. I knew this segment was going to fly by. We've got three people talking about things, and the Women's Leadership Academy is a big part of DC37's future. Daisha, just if you would, just sum up again briefly your experience.
It was an experience of self-building, self-empowerment, sisterhood, building your skill set, and being able to know that you can help future members or even have other members recommit to being an active member in the union. And has allowed me to be more confident in doing this.
Hey, got you promotion on a job.
Yes, it
honor is due. Congratulations. Daisha Padia joining us by phone. She's an associate public health sanitarian and a member of Local 768. Stacey Payton is with...
I'm with New York State Homes and Community Renewal, and I am a Housing and Community Renewal representative. But our local is one of the smallest, and we represent... We're the executive branch of employees that work for the state of New York. but are represented by DC 37.
And Barbara Edmonds?
Thank you. And I just want to quickly uplift Claire Manelis, who really coordinated this along with Diallo Shabazz. And folks can email her at cmenelas@dc37.net for additional information. And we're excited, and we know women are going to be out there. And happy Women's History Month.
We'll be right back.
Were you a September 11th responder or volunteer? Were you present at the dust cloud on 9/11? Do you live, work, or go to school in the New York City disaster area on 9/11 or in the following months? Do you now suffer from problems such as chronic cough, shortness of breath, anxiety, depression, or have other symptoms? If so, you may be eligible for the World Trade Center Health Program and could receive medical monitoring and treatment at no out-of-pocket cost to you. To learn more about the program and get an application, go to www.cdc.gov/WTC or call 1-888-982-4748. If you were there, you deserve care. Call today. 1-888-982-4748. 1-888-982-4748. If you were there, you deserve care.
Last week, the Victims Compensation Fund Special Master Rupa Bhattacharya said the fund will be forced to cut awards due to insufficient funding. Meanwhile, activists have called on Congress to permanently fund the Victim Compensation Fund. And joining us in the studio to discuss this critical situation is DC 37 Safety and Health Director Veronica Foley. Welcome back to the show, Veronica.
Thank you. Hi.
Hi. It seems that we go through this way too often in terms of I see John Stewart in the newspaper in Washington, D.C., with the Capitol building behind him saying, fund the Victim Compensation Fund. But this is news. And let's talk a little bit about the fund itself and what we can do about what we should be doing in terms of demonstrating support. So
the Victims Compensation Fund is incredibly important, as is the World Trade Center Health Program. In safety and health, we get a lot of calls from members, personal visits from members who may be in the building to learn more about their pension benefits, their medical coverage. Most recently, I've been having people come to my office with concerns about the costs of medical care. And after talking to them for a little bit, you realize that they were either responders or survivors of the 9/11 attacks. And their illnesses, at least from what I can hear, seem to be directly related to 9/11 and the state of affairs at the time and how that's affected their systems. And we do a lot of work with connecting people to the program, which you need to do first, and then connecting them to the VCF. So the Victims Compensation Fund really will help with medical costs, as will the health program, but it's truly a way to, I almost call it reparations. Because not everybody was a responder. Some people were survivors. And it's a wonderful fund in order to support families. A lot of people lost family members either to illness or the attacks the day of. So it's a great way to do our best to make people whole.
And how does someone begin this process? I mean, they've got to go to fill out a form? They have to go online to fill out a form? What does someone do to begin the process of being part of this?
So to begin the process, you need to first be in the World Trade Center Health Program, which will provide you with medical monitoring and treatment at no out-of-pocket costs. But the most important thing with regards to the Victims Compensation Fund is once you're in that program and you receive a certification, meaning you have an illness that is certified as related to 9/11 attacks. So once you have that piece of paper that says that your illness, may it be PTSD, depression, thyroid cancer, lymphoma, lung cancer, there's a number of certified illnesses. You take that and you begin the process with the Victims Compensation Fund, which is essentially you begin the process of filing a claim with them. You go through a lot of the details of what you experienced, your medical history, where you were, similar to the health program. You need to prove, normally with assistance from your employer at the time, or colleagues can write affidavits saying that you were there. So it's a process of getting into the health program, becoming certified with an illness. Once you have a certification, you can then apply to the Victims Compensation Fund. And it's a pretty – the Victims Compensation Fund tends to be paper heavy. The system, the process can be a little long, but, you know, we do our best in safety and health to hook you up with people that we know who are experts on the process itself. We work closely with NICOSH, which is a great nonprofit organization here in New York. They do a lot of advocacy. For example, they were just with Jon Stewart, Carolyn Maloney, Chuck Schumer, everybody this week.
Jerry Nadler.
Yeah, Jerry Nadler down in D.C. doing some major support work for their newest legislation that they've introduced.
Which that legislation would make it permanent?
Make it permanent, yeah. Yeah.
And then let me just ask you a question because I get a little bit confused on this.
Mm-hmm.
In 2015, the James Zadroga Act was about to expire.
Mm-hmm.
And Jon Stewart and others, you know, walked the halls of Congress to get it renewed.
Mm-hmm.
How is the Zadroga Act connected to the VCF? And why does that sound like a separate thing to me, or is it not?
So it's a part of it. I'm still learning a little bit, too, as well, especially as, you know.
It seems overly complicated.
It is. Well, I think it's a little less complicated. What's complicated is that for some reason we need to fight for this every single time.
Right.
That we've had to fight for it more than once. There was a VCF fund that was functioning between 2001 and 2004, but it was separate from this Zadroga Act. I believe when Zadroga was passed, first established and signed by Obama in 2011, the VCF was a part of this. You know, that there's going to be a fund that is associated with the health program, which Zadroga put into place.
Okay.
And then after 2011, it had to be reauthorized in 2015. And currently, the reauthorization that took effect in 2015 will be up in 2020. So right now, if you want to get a claim into the VCF, you have to do it before December 18th of 2020.
In the meantime, they've got to get the funds to fund
right,
VCF.
Right. So yeah, this reauthorization that we're talking about now that would be permanent is for the future, but also would cover the funding gap that we're currently experiencing. Because people with pending claims at the moment are going to be receiving 50% less. And then people who have a claim that is taken moving forward before the 2020 date, they're going to be receiving 70% less because of the funding problem. So they're definitely making sure that this push is going to cover the current gap and then also set everyone up for the future.
And I see in the paper that Republican congressmen from the heartland of America are questioning why. What has New York State done? And I just saw Stephen King, who's the representative from Long Island, mm-hmm. having to chastise Representative Meadows. Peter King. Stephen King is the bad guy from Iowa. Yeah, well. So this is all happening. We're going to have to stay diligent. I don't know if there's something that we should be doing right now in terms of writing our congressman or getting people signing a petition or whatever. Are you aware of anything that we should be doing?
You know, I'm looking to figure that out so that I can share that information.
Okay.
But I really do think, you know, especially in my work in particular in safety and health, data is so important because we can actually show the numbers. You know, these numbers are people and their experiences. So don't be dismayed by what's going on. You know, get yourself into the health program if you feel you may have an illness that is related and file claims. I mean, part of what this discussion lately has been is that there are so many claims that have almost doubled since last August. So it's pretty crucial that we keep showing them that there's a need for this. There's a need for this funding. There are people who need help. So
we're talking with DC 37 Safety and Health Director Veronica Foley. We've got a couple of minutes left, about a minute and a half. What is happening in safety and health? What is taking up your time in terms of the day to day of the city workforce?
So, you know, we're busy. We cover a lot of members in so many different job titles. It really keeps us on our toes. We have to consistently be learning about the work that our members do in order to make sure that it's safe. We consistently receive requests for assistance where we may do inspections
right.
to check in on people. So we're doing that often. But we're also working on looking into the status of the school kitchens. This is something that's new. We've recently partnered with CUNY, actually, to do a study of the school kitchens over the summer, mostly related to temperatures and ventilation. And also something that takes up a good chunk of my time is working with the public health system. So we're working with our members who work in psychiatric units and keep those spaces safe for the public.
Veronica Foley, DC 37 Safety and Health Director, thanks for talking to us. And we're going to stay on top of this VCF issue, and we will talk to you again about that. I want to thank my guests this evening, the graduates of the Women's Leadership Academy, Barbara Edmonds, Director of Field Operations, and Veronica Foley. Before we go, March is Women's History Month, and DC 37 celebrates it with the second annual Women's Forum with the focus on visionary women, champions of peace and nonviolence, Friday, March 15th at 6 p.m. For details, call 212-815-1000. The producer of the show is Rudy Orozco. The engineer is Andrea Minocchio. I'm Chris Policano. Until next time, ciao.